natural flight instabilities, Reardon said.
He was always shifting the subject, never letting her catch up. I'm coming to that.
We're eager to hear.
Open sarcasm. She struggled to control her temper. However bad things were now, it would be worse if she lost her temper.
You read a sentence before, she said. Let me finish it.
The aircraft has demonstrated marked sensitivity to manual handling during attitude change, but this sensitivity is entirely within design parameters and presents no difficulty to properly certified pilots.
That's the rest of the sentence.
But you've admitted there is sensitive handling. Isn't that just another word for instability?
No, she said. Sensitive does not mean unstable.
The plane can't be controlled, Reardon said, shaking his head.
It can.
You did a study because you were worried.
We did a study because it's our job to make sure the aircraft is safe, she said. And we are sure it is safe.
A secret study.
It wasn't secret.
Never distributed. Never shown to the public.
It was an internal report, she said.
You have nothing to hide?
No, she said.
Then why haven't you told us the truth about Trans-Pacific Flight 545?
The truth?
We're told your accident team already has a preliminary finding on the probable cause. Is that not true?
We're close, she said.
Close. Ms. Singleton, do you have a finding or not?
Casey stared at Reardon. The question hung in the air.
I'm very sorry, the cameraman said behind her, but we have to reload. Camera reloading. Reloading.
Reardon looked as if he had been slapped. But almost immediately he recovered.
To be continued, he said, smiling at Casey.
He was relaxed. He knew he had beaten her. He got up from his chair, turned his back to her. The big lights clicked off. The room seemed suddenly almost dark. Somebody turned the air conditioning back on. Casey got up, too. She pulled the radio mic off her waist. The makeup woman came running over to her, holding out a powder puff. Casey held up her hand. In a minute, she said.
With the lights off, she saw Richmond heading for the door. Casey hurried after him.
Building 64,
3:01 p.m.
She caught him in the hallway, grabbed him by the arm, spun him around.
You son of a bitch. Hey, Richmond said, take it easy.
He smiled, nodded past her shoulder. Looking back, she saw the soundman and one of the cameramen coming out into the hallway. Furious, Casey pushed Richmond backward, shoving him through the door to the women's room. Richmond started to laugh.
Geez, Casey, I didn't know you cared.
Then they were in the bathroom. She pushed him back against the row of sinks.
You little bastard, she hissed. I don't know what the hell you think you're doing, but you released that report and I'm gonna...
You're going to do nothing, Richmond said, his voice suddenly cold. He threw her hands off him.
You still don't get it, do you?
It's over, Casey. You just blew the China sale. You're finished. She stared at him, not understanding. He was strong, confident, a different person.
Edgerton's finished. The China sale's finished, and you're finished, he smiled. Just the way John said it would happen.
Martyr, she thought.
Martyr was behind it.
If the China sale goes, Martyr will go too. Edgerton will see to that.
Richmond was shaking his head pityingly.
No, he won't.
Edgerton's sitting on his ass in Hong Kong. He'll never know what hit him. By noon Sunday, Martyr will be the new president of Norton Aircraft. It'll take him 10 minutes with the board. Because we've made a much bigger deal with Korea. 110 aircraft firm, and an option on 35 more. $16 billion. The board will be thrilled.
Korea? Casey said. She was trying to put it together. Because it was a huge order, the biggest in the history of the company. But why would...
Because he gave them the wing, Richmond said. And in return, they're more than happy to buy 110 aircraft.
He's giving them the wing?
Sure, it's a killer deal.
Yeah, Casey said.
It kills the company.
Global economy, Richmond said. Get with the program.
But you're gutting the company, she said.
$16 billion, Richmond said. The minute that's announced, Norton's stock will go through the roof. Everybody gets well.
Everybody but the people in the company, she thought.
This is a done deal, Richmond said. All we needed was somebody to publicly trash the N-22, and you just did that for us.
Casey sighed. Her shoulders dropped. Looking past Richmond, she saw herself in the mirror. Makeup was pancaked around her neck, and now it was cracking. Her eyes were dark. She looked haggard, exhausted, defeated.
So I suggest, Richmond said, that you ask me, very politely, what you should do next, because your only choice now is to follow orders. Do as you're told, be a good girl, and maybe John will give you severance, say 3 months. Otherwise, you're out on your fucking ass.
He leaned close to her. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, Casey said.
I'm waiting. Ask politely.
In her exhaustion, her mind raced, examining the options, trying to see a way out. But she could see no way out. Newsline would run the story. Martyr's plan would succeed. She was defeated. She had been defeated from the very beginning. Defeated from the first day Richmond had shown up.
I'm still waiting, Richmond said.
She looked at his smooth face, smelled his cologne. The little bastard was enjoying this, and in a moment of fury, of deep outrage, she suddenly saw another possibility. From the beginning, she had tried so hard to do the right thing, to solve the problem of 545. She had been honest, she had been straight, and it had just gotten her into trouble. Or had it?
You have to face facts here, Richmond said. It's over. There's nothing you can do.
She pushed away from the sink.
Watch me, she said. And she walked out of the room.
War Room, 3:15 p.m. Casey slipped into her seat. A sound man came over and clipped the radio pack to the waist of her dress.
Say a few words for me, will you, please, just for level? Testing, testing. I'm getting tired, she said.
That's fine, thank you.
She saw Richmond slip into the room and stand with his back to the far wall. He had a faint smile on his face. He didn't look worried. He was confident there was nothing she could do. Martyr had made a huge deal. He was shipping the wing, he was gutting the company, and he'd used Casey to do it. Reardon dropped into his seat opposite her, shrugging his shoulders, adjusted his tie. He smiled at her.
How are you holding up?
I'm okay.
Hot in here, isn't it? He said.
He glanced at his watch.
We're almost finished.
Malone came over and whispered in Reardon's ear. The whispering continued for some time.
Reardon said, Really?
And his eyebrows went up. Then he nodded several times. Finally, he said,
Got it.
He began to shuffle his papers, going through the folder in front of him.
Malone said, Guys, we ready? A camera ready. B camera ready. Sound ready.
Roll tape, she said. This is it, Casey thought. She took a deep breath, looked expectantly at Reardon. Reardon smiled at her.
You're an executive at Norton Aircraft.
Yes.
Been here 5 years.
Yes.
You're a trusted, highly placed executive.
She nodded.
If he only knew.
Now there is an incident, Flight 45, involving an aircraft you say is perfectly safe.
Correct.
Yet 3 people died and more than 50 were injured.
Yes.
The footage which we've all seen is horrifying. Your incident review team has been working around the clock. And now we hear you have a finding.
Yes, she said. You know what happened on that flight.
Careful. She had to do this very, very carefully. Because the truth was, she didn't know.
She just had a very strong suspicion. They still had to put the sequence together to verify that things had happened in a certain order. The chain of causation, they didn't know for sure.
"We are close to a finding," Casey said.
"Needless to say, we're eager to hear."
"We will announce it tomorrow," Casey said.
Behind the lights, she saw Richmond's startled reaction. He hadn't been expecting that. The little bastard was trying to see where she was going. Let him try. Across the table from her, Reardon turned aside, and Malone whispered in his ear. Reardon nodded, turned back to Casey.
"Miss Singleton, if you know now, why wait?"
"Because this was a serious accident, as you said yourself. There's already been a great deal of unwarranted speculation from many sources. Norton Aircraft feels it is important to act responsibly. Before we say anything publicly, we have to confirm our findings at flight test using the same aircraft that was involved in the accident."
"When will you test the flight?"
"Tomorrow morning."
"Ah," Reardon said regretfully, "but that's too late for our broadcast. Do you understand that you're denying your company the opportunity to respond to these serious charges?"
Casey had her answer ready. "We've scheduled the flight test for 5 a.m., she said. "We'll hold a press conference immediately afterward, tomorrow at noon."
"Noon," Reardon said. His expression was bland, but she knew he was working it out. Noon in L.A. was 3 p.m. in New York. Plenty of time to make the evening news in both New York and Los Angeles. Norton's preliminary finding would be widely reported on both local and network news, and Newsline, which aired at 10 p.m. Saturday night, would be out of date. Depending on what emerged from the press conference, the Newsline segment edited the night before would be ancient history. It might even be embarrassing. Reardon sighed. "On the other hand," he said, "we want to be fair to you."
"Naturally," Casey said. Norton Administration, 4:15 p.m.
"Fuck her," Marter said to Richmond. "It doesn't make any difference what she does now."
"But if she's scheduling a flight test..."
"Who cares?" Marter said.
"And I think she's going to let the news crew film it."
"So what? Flight test will only make the story worse. She has no idea what caused the accident, and she has no idea what will happen if she takes that Trans-Pacific plane up. They probably can't reproduce the event, and there may be problems nobody knows about."
"Like what?"
"That aircraft went through very severe G-force loads," Marter said. "It may have undetected structural damage. Anything can happen when they take that plane up."
Marter made a dismissive wave.
"This changes nothing. Newsline airs from 10 to 11 Saturday night. Early Saturday evening, I'll notify the board that some bad publicity is coming our way, and we'll have to schedule an emergency meeting Sunday morning. Hal can't get back from Hong Kong in time, and his friends on the board will drop him when they hear about a $16 billion deal. They've all got stock. They know what the announcement will do to their shares. I'm the next president of this company, and nobody can do a thing to stop it. Not Hal Edgerton, and certainly not Casey Singleton."
"I don't know," Richmond said. "I think she may be planning something. She's pretty smart, John."
"Not smart enough," Marter said.
War Room, 4:20 p.m. The cameras were packed up, the white foam sheets removed from the ceiling, the microphones unclipped, the electrical boxes and camera cases removed. But the negotiations dragged on. Ed Fuller, the lanky head of legal, was there. So was Teddy Rawley, the pilot, and two engineers who worked on FT to answer technical questions that arose. For Newsline, Malone now did all of the talking. Reardon paced in the background, occasionally stopping to whisper in her ear. His commanding presence seemed to have vanished with the bright lights. He now appeared tired, fretful, and impatient. Malone began by saying that since Newsline was doing an entire segment on the Norton N-22, It was in the interest of the company to allow Newsline to film the flight test. Casey said that presented no problem. Flight tests were documented with dozens of video cameras mounted both inside and outside the plane. The Newsline people could watch the entire test on monitors on the ground. They could have the film afterward for their broadcast. No, Malone said. That wouldn't be sufficient. Newsline's crews had to actually be on the plane. Casey said that was impossible, that no airframe manufacturer had ever allowed an outside crew on a flight test. She was, she said, already making a concession to let them see the video on the ground. Not good enough, Malone said. Ed Fuller broke in to explain it was a question of liability. Norton simply couldn't allow uninsured non-employees on the test. You realize, of course, there is inherent danger in flight test. It's simply inescapable. Malone said that Newsline would accept any risk and sign waivers of liability. Ed Fuller said he would have to draw up the waivers, but that Newsline's lawyers would have to approve them, and there wasn't time for that. Malone said she could get approval from Newsline's lawyers in an hour, any time of the day or night. Fuller shifted ground. He said if Norton was going to let Newsline see the flight test, he wanted to be sure that the results of that test were accurately reported. He said he wanted to approve the edited film. Malone said that journalistic ethics forbade that, and in any case, there wasn't time. If the flight test ended around noon, she would have to cut film in the truck and transmit it to New York at once. Fuller said the problem for the company remained. He wanted the flight test portrayed accurately. They went back and forth. Finally, Malone said she would include 30 seconds of unedited comment on the outcome of the flight by a Norton spokesperson. This would be taken from the press conference. Fuller demanded a minute. They compromised on 40 seconds. We have another problem, Fuller said. If we let you film the flight test, we don't want you to use that tape you obtained today showing the actual incident. No way, Malone said. The tape was going to be aired. You characterized the tape as having been obtained from a Norton employee, Fuller said. That's incorrect. We want the provenance accurately stated. Well, we certainly got it from someone who works for Norton. No, Fuller said, you didn't. It's one of your subcontractors. No, it's not. I can provide you with the IRS definition of a subcontractor if you like. This is a fine point. We have already obtained a sworn statement from the receptionist, Christine Barron. She is not an employee of Norton Aircraft. She is not, in fact, an employee of video imaging. She is a temp from an agency. What's the point here? We want you to state the facts accurately, that you obtained the tape from sources outside the company. Malone shrugged. As I said, this is a fine point. Then what's the problem? Malone thought for a minute. Okay, she said. Fuller slid a piece of paper across the table. This brief document conveys that understanding. Sign it. Malone looked at Reardon. Reardon shrugged. Malone signed it. I don't understand what all this fuss is about. She started to push it back to Fuller and paused. Two crews on the aircraft during the flight test. Is that our agreement? No, Fuller said. That was never the agreement. Your crews will watch the test on the ground. That won't work for us. Casey said that the Newsline crews could come to the test area. They could film the preparations, the takeoff, and landing, but they couldn't actually come on the plane during the flight. Sorry, Malone said. Teddy Rawley cleared his throat. I don't think you understand the situation, Ms. Malone, he said. You can't be walking around filming inside the airplane during a flight test. Everybody on board has to be strapped in a four-point harness. You can't even get up to pee. And you can't have lights or batteries because they generate magnetic fields that might disrupt our readings. We don't need lights, she said. We can shoot available light. You don't understand, Rawley said. It can get pretty hairy up there. That's why we have to be there, Malone said.
Ed Fuller cleared his throat.
Let me be entirely clear, Ms. Malone, he said. Under no circumstances is this company going to allow your film crew on board that aircraft. It is absolutely out of the question.
Malone's face was rigid, set.
Ma'am, Rawley said, you gotta realize there's a reason we test over the desert, over large, uninhabited spaces.
You mean it might crash?
I mean, we don't know what might happen. Trust me on this. You want to be on the ground.
Malone shook her head.
No, we must have our crews on board.
Ma'am, there's going to be big G-forces.
Casey said, there'll be 30 cameras all over the plane. They'll cover every possible angle.
Cockpit, wings, passenger cabin, everywhere.
You're getting exclusive use of the film. No one will know your cameras aren't getting the footage.
Malone glowered, but Casey knew that she had made the point. The woman only cared about the visuals.
I want to place the cameras, she said.
Uh-uh, Rawley said.
I have to be able to say our cameras are on board, Malone said. I have to be able to say that.
In the end, Casey hammered out a compromise. Newsline would be allowed to position 2 locked-down cameras anywhere in the plane to cover the test flight. They would take the feed directly from these cameras. In addition, they would be allowed to use footage from other cameras mounted in the interior. Finally, Newsline would be allowed to shoot a stand-up with Reardon outside Building 64, where the assembly line was located. Norton would provide transportation for the Newsline crews to the Arizona test facility later in the day, would put them up in a local motel, would transport them to the test facility in the morning, and back to L.A. in the afternoon. Malone pushed the paper back to Fuller.
Deal, she said.
Reardon was looking fretfully at his watch as he left with Malone to shoot the stand-up. Casey was alone with Rawley and Fuller in the war room. Fuller sighed.
I hope we made the right decision, he turned to Casey.
I did what you asked when you called me earlier from the video company.
Yes, Ed, she said. You were perfect.
But I saw the tape, he said. It's dreadful. I'm afraid that whatever the flight test shows, that tape will be the only thing anybody remembers.
Casey said, if anybody ever sees that tape.
My concern, Fuller said, is that Newsline will run that tape no matter what.
I think they won't, Casey said. Not when we get through with them.
Fuller sighed. I hope you're right. High stakes.
Yes, she said. High stakes.
Teddy said, you better tell them to bring warm clothing. You too, babe. And another thing, I watched that woman. She thinks she's going to get on the plane tomorrow.
Yeah, probably.
And you too, right?
Teddy said.
Maybe, Casey said.
You better think about this real good, Teddy said. Because you saw the QAR video, Casey. That airplane exceeded its design G-loads by 160%. That guy subjected the airframe to forces it was never built to withstand. And tomorrow, I'm going to go up and do it again. She shrugged.
Doherty checked the fuse, she said, and they've X-rayed and...
Yeah, he checked, Teddy said, but not thoroughly. Ordinarily, we'd go over that fuselage for a month before we put it back in active service. We'd X-ray every joint on the plane. That hasn't been done.
What are you saying?
I'm saying, Teddy said, that when I put that aircraft through those same G-force loads, there's a chance that the airframe will fail.
You trying to scare me? Casey said.
No, I'm just telling you. This is serious, Casey. Real world. It could happen.
Outside Building 64, 4:55 p.m.
No aircraft company in history, Reardon said, has ever permitted a television crew on a flight test. But so important is this test to the future of Norton Aircraft, so confident are they of the outcome that they have agreed to allow our crews to film. So today, for the first time, we will be seeing footage of the actual plane involved in Flight 545, the controversial Norton N-22 aircraft. Critics say it's a death trap. The company says it's safe. The flight test will prove who's right. Reardon paused.
Done, Jennifer said.
You need something for the cut?
Yeah.
Where do they do the test, anyway?
Yuma?
Okay, Reardon said. Standing in the afternoon sun before Building 64, he looked down at his feet and said in a low, confidential voice, "We are here at the Norton Test Facility in Yuma, Arizona. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, and the Norton team is making final preparations to take Flight 545 into the air." He looked up. "What time's dawn?"
"Damned if I know," Jennifer said. "Cover it."
"All right," Reardon said. He looked down at his feet again and intoned, "In the early pre-dawn, tension mounts. In the pre-dawn darkness, tension mounts. As dawn breaks, tension mounts."
"That should do it," Jennifer said.
"How do you want to handle the wrap?" he said.
"You've got to cover it both ways, Marty."
"I mean, do we win or what?"
"Cover it both ways, to be sure."
Reardon looked down at his feet again. As the aircraft lands, the team is jubilant, happy faces all around. The flight is successful. Norton has made its point, at least for now.
He took a breath.
As the aircraft lands, the team is muted. Norton is devastated. The deadly controversy over the N-22 continues to rage. He looked up. "Enough?"
She said, "You better give me an on-camera about the controversy continues to rage. We can close with that."
"Good idea."
Marty always thought it was a good idea for him to appear on camera. He stood erect, set his jaw, and faced the camera.
"Here in this building where the N-22 is built..." No. "Behind me is the building where..." "No, hold on." He shook his head, faced the camera again. "And yet, the bitter controversy over the N-22 will not die. Here, in this building where the aircraft is made, workers are confident that it is a safe, reliable aircraft. But the critics of the N-22 remain unconvinced. Will there be another harvest of death in the skies? Only time will tell. This is Martin Reardon for Newsline, Burbank, California."
He blinked.
"Too corny, too much on the money?"
"Great, Marty."
He was already unclipping his mic, removing the radio pack from his belt. He pecked Jennifer on the cheek. "I'm out of here," he said, and sprinted to the waiting car. Jennifer turned to her crew.
"Pack up, guys," she said.
"We're going to Arizona."
Saturday. Norton Test Facility, Yuma, Arizona, 4:45 a.m. A thin streak of red was starting to appear behind the flat range of the Gila Mountains to the east. The sky overhead was deep indigo, a few stars still visible. The air was very cold. Casey could see her breath. She zipped up her windbreaker and stamped her feet, trying to stay warm. On the runway, lights shone up at the Trans-Pacific wide body as the FT team finished installing the video cameras. There were men on the wings, around the engines, by the landing gear. The Newsline crew was already out, filming the preparations. Malone stood alongside Casey, watching them.
"Jesus, it's cold," she said.
Casey went into the flight test station, a low Spanish-style bungalow beside the tower. Inside, the room was filled with monitors, each displaying the feed from a single camera. Most of the cameras were focused on specific parts. She found the camera on the right locking pin, and so the room had a technical, industrial feel. It was not very exciting.
"This isn't what I expected," Malone said.
Casey pointed around the room. There's the cockpit, high mount down, cockpit facing back at the pilot. You see Rawley there in the chair, the interior cabin looking aft, interior cabin looking forward, looking out on right wing, the left wing, those are your main interiors, and we'll also have the chase plane.
Chase plane?
An F-14 fighter follows the wide body all through the flight, so we'll have those cameras too. Malone frowned.
I don't know, she said in a disappointed voice. I thought it would be more, you know, glitzy.
We're still on the ground.
Malone was frowning, unhappy.
These angles on the cabin, she said. Who will be in there during the flight?
Nobody.
You mean the seats will be empty?
Right, it's a test flight.
That isn't going to look very good, Malone said.
But that's how it is on a test flight, Casey said. That is how it's done.
But it doesn't look good, Malone said. This isn't compelling. There should be people in the seats, at least in some of them. Can't we put some people on board? Can't I go on board?
Casey shook her head. It's a dangerous flight, she said. The airframe was badly stressed by the accident. We don't know what will happen.
Malone snorted. Oh, come on. There aren't any lawyers here. How about it?
Casey just looked at her. She was a foolish kid who knew nothing about the world, who was just interested in a look, who lived for appearances, who skimmed over surfaces. She knew she should refuse. Instead, she heard herself say,
You won't like it.
You're telling me it's not safe?
I'm telling you that you won't like it.
I'm going on, Malone said.
She looked at Casey, her expression an open challenge.
So, how about you?
In her mind, Casey could hear Marty Reardon's voice as he said,
Despite her repeated insistence that the N-22 was safe, Norton's own spokesperson, Casey Singleton, refused to board the plane for the flight test. She said that the reason she wouldn't fly on it was...
What?
Casey didn't have an answer. At least not an answer that would work for television. Not an answer that would play. And suddenly the days of strain, the effort to try and solve the incident, the effort to contrive an appearance for television, the effort to make sure she didn't say a single sentence that could be taken out of context, the distortion of everything in her life for this unwarranted intrusion of television made her furious. She knew exactly what was coming. Malone had seen the videos, but she didn't understand they were real.
Okay, Casey said. Let's go.
Aboard TPA 545, 5:05 a.m. Jennifer shivered. It was cold inside the airplane, and under fluorescent lights, the rows of empty seats, the long aisles made it seem even colder. She was faintly shocked when she recognized in places the damage that she had seen on the videotape. This was where it had happened, she thought. This was the plane. There were still bloody footprints on the ceiling, broken luggage bins, dented fiberglass panels, and a lingering odor. Even worse, in some places the plastic panels had been pulled off around the windows so that she could see the naked silver padding, the bundle of wires. It was suddenly all too clear that she was in a big metal machine. She wondered if she had made a mistake, but by then, Singleton was gesturing for her to take a seat right in the front of the center cabin, facing a locked-down video camera. Jennifer sat beside Singleton and waited as one of the Norton technicians, a man in coveralls, tightened the shoulder harness around her body. It was one of those harnesses like the stewardesses wore on regular flights. Two green canvas straps came over each shoulder, meeting at the waist. Then there was another wide canvas strap that went across her thighs. Heavy metal buckles clamped it all in place. It looked serious. The man in coveralls pulled the straps tight, grunting.
"Geez," Jennifer said. "Does it have to be that tight?"
"Ma'am, you need it as tight as you can stand it," the man said. "If you can breathe, it's too loose. Can you feel the way it is now?
Yes, she said.
That's how you want it when you put it back on. Now here's your release here, he showed her. Pull that now.
Why do I need to know?
Case of emergency. Pull it, please.
She pulled the release. The straps sprang away from her body, the pressure released.
And just do it up yourself again, if you don't mind.
Jennifer put the contraption back together just as he had done it before. It wasn't difficult. These people made such a fuss about nothing.
Now tighten it, please, ma'am.
She pulled the straps.
Tighter.
If I need it tighter, I'll tighten it later.
Ma'am, he said, by the time you realize you need it tighter, it'll be too late. Do it now, please.
Alongside her, Singleton was calmly putting the harness on, cinching it down brutally. The straps dug into Singleton's thighs, pulled hard on her shoulders. Singleton sighed, sat back.
I believe you ladies are prepared, the man said. You have a pleasant flight.
He turned and went out the door. The pilot, that Rawley character, came back from the cockpit shaking his head.
Ladies, he said, I urge you not to do this.
He was looking mostly at Singleton. He almost seemed to be angry at her.
Singleton said, Fly the plane, Teddy. That's your best offer?
Best and final.
He disappeared. The intercom clicked. Prepare to close, please.
The doors were closed, clicked shut.
Thunk, thunk.
The air was still cold. Jennifer shivered in her harness.
She looked over her shoulder at the rows of empty seats. Then she looked at Singleton. Singleton stared straight ahead. Jennifer heard the whine of the jet engines as they started up, a low moan at first, then rising in pitch. The intercom clicked. She heard the pilot say,
Tower, this is Norton 01. Request clearance for FT station check.
Click. Roger 01, taxi across runway 2 left, contact point 6.
Click. Roger, Tower.
The plane began to move, rolling forward. Out the windows, she saw the sky was lightening. After a few moments, the plane stopped again.
What are they doing? Jennifer asked.
Weighing it, Singleton answered.
They weigh before and after to guarantee we've simulated flying conditions.
On some kind of scale?
Built into the concrete.
Click. Teddy, need about 2 feet more on nose.
Click.
Hang on.
The whine of the engines increased. Jennifer felt the plane inch forward slowly. Then it stopped again.
Click. Thank you, got it. You're at 5727 GW and CG is 32% MAC, right where you want to be.
Click.
Bye, guys.
Click.
Tower 01, request clearance for takeoff.
Click.
Cleared runway 3, contact ground point 63 when off the runway.
Click.
Roger.
Then the plane began to roll forward, the engines increasing from a whine to a full deep roar, the sound building until it sounded louder to Jennifer than any engines she had heard before. She felt the thump of the wheels going over the cracks in the runway, and then suddenly they had lifted off, the plane going up, the sky blue out the windows, airborne.
Click. Okay, ladies, we're going to proceed to flight level 370, that's 37,000 feet, and we're going to circle there between Yuma Station and Carstairs, Nevada, for the duration of this excursion. Everybody comfy? If you look to your left, you will see our chase plane coming alongside.
Jennifer looked out and saw a silver jet fighter glinting in the morning light. It was very close to their aircraft, close enough to see the pilot wave, then suddenly it slid backward.
Click.
You probably won't see much more of him. He'll be staying high and behind us, out of our wake, the safest place to be. Right now, we're coming up on 12,000 feet. You may want to swallow, Ms. Malone. We're not creeping up like the airlines.
Jennifer swallowed, heard her ears pop loudly. She said, Why are we going up so fast? He wants to get to altitude quickly, to cold soak the plane.
Cold soak? At 37,000 feet, the air temperature is minus 50 degrees. The airplane is warmer than that right now, and different parts will cool off at different rates, but eventually on a long flight, such as a long Pacific crossing, all the parts of the plane will reach that temperature. One of the questions for the IRT is whether the cable rigging behaves differently at cold temperature. Cold soaking means putting the plane up at altitude long enough to cool it down. Then we begin the test.
How long are we talking? Jennifer said.
Standard cold soak is 2 hours.
We have to sit here for 2 hours?
Singleton looked at her. You wanted to come.
You mean we spend 2 hours doing nothing?
Click. Oh, we'll try to amuse you, Ms. Malone, the pilot said. We're now at 22,000 feet and climbing. It'll be another few minutes to cruise altitude. We are at 287 KIAS, and we will stabilize at 340 KIAS, which is 0.8 Mach, 80% of the speed of sound. That's the usual cruise speed for commercial aircraft. Everybody comfy?
Jennifer said, Can you hear us?
I can hear and see you. And if you look to your right, you can see me.
A monitor in the cabin in front of them came on. Jennifer saw the pilot's shoulder, his head, the controls arrayed in front of him, bright light out the window. Now they were high enough that full sunlight streamed in through the windows, but the interior of the plane was still cold. Because she was sitting in the center of the cabin, Jennifer could not see the ground out the windows. She looked at Singleton. Singleton smiled.
Click. Okay, we are now at flight level 370, Doppler clear, no turbulence, a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Would you ladies please unbuckle your harnesses and come to the cockpit?
What? Jennifer thought.
But Singleton was already taking hers off, standing up in the cabin. I thought we couldn't walk around.
It's okay right now, Singleton said.
Jennifer climbed out of her harness and walked with Singleton up through first class to the cockpit. She felt the faint vibration of the airplane beneath her feet, but it was quite stable. The door to the cockpit was open. She saw Raleigh in there, with a second man he didn't introduce, and a third who was working with some instrumentation. Jennifer stood with Singleton just outside the cockpit, looking in.
"Now, Ms. Malone," Raleigh said, "you interviewed Mr. Barker, didn't you?"
"Yes."
"What did he say was the cause of the accident?"
"He said the slats deployed."
"Uh-huh. Okay, please watch carefully. This is the flaps-slats handle here. We are at cruise speed, cruise altitude. I am now going to deploy the slats."
He reached his hand forward to the thing between the seats.
"Wait a minute, let me get strapped in."
"You're perfectly safe, Ms. Malone."
"I want to sit down, at least."
"Then sit down." Jennifer started back, then realized that Singleton was remaining standing by the cockpit door, staring at her. Feeling foolish, Jennifer went back and stood by Singleton.
"Deploying slats now."
Raleigh pushed the lever down. She heard a faint rumble that lasted a few seconds, nothing else. The nose tilted, steadied.
"Slats are extended."
Raleigh pointed to the instrument panel. "You see the speed, you see the altitude? And you see that indicator that says, slats? We have just duplicated the exact conditions that Mr. Barker insists caused the death of three people on this very same aircraft. And as you see, nothing happened. The attitude is rock solid. Want to try again?"
"Yes," she said. She didn't know what else to say.
"Okay, slats retracting. This time maybe you'd like to do it yourself, Ms. Malone. Or maybe you'd like to walk over and look at the wings, see what actually happens when the slats extend. It's kind of neat."
Raleigh pressed a button.
Norton Station, this is 01. Can I have a monitor check?"
He listened a moment.
"Okay, fine.
Ms. Malone, move a little forward so your friends can see you on that camera up there." He pointed to the ceiling of the cockpit. "Give him a wave." Jennifer waved, feeling foolish.
"Ms. Malone, how many more times would you like us to extend and retract the slats to satisfy your cameras?"
"Well, I don't know."
She was feeling more foolish by the minute. The flight test was starting to seem like a trap. The footage would make Barker look like a fool. It would make the whole segment look ridiculous. It would make... We can do this all day if you like,
Raleigh was saying.
That's the point. No problem deploying the slats at cruise speed on the N-22. Plane can handle it fine.
Try it once more, she said tightly.
That's the handle there. Just flip that little metal cover up and pull it down about an inch.
She knew what he was